Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Issued 98. Graham Flanagan of Business Insider. Matt Scalise, editor of FilmNerds.com.
Hey, Matt, how's it going?
Pretty good, Graham. What's up?
I just wanted to chat with you about 10 Cloverfield Lane, which is getting a very positive response from the critics and just generally online from what I've seen on my Twitter and Facebook feed, and also did pretty well at the box office this weekend, and it looks like it's going to end up breaking even at least and then eventually making a profit. So it's safe to say at this point that this movie is a hit. And you saw it on Friday and with a crowd in Birmingham, and I saw it yesterday at a super early bird special in New York with a much smaller crowd. But I wanted to just go ahead and get your initial thoughts.
Yeah, I came into the movie, you know, as somebody who really enjoyed Cloverfield a lot. And so the marketing that they did for this movie, which was kind of a really unique campaign of, you know, really dropping it on everybody at a pretty late date, it really worked well on me. I don't know if I'm the ideal, you know, candidate, because I know that Cloverfield made a lot of money, but I don't think it's exactly, you know, kind of a cultural icon of a movie. I think it's still kind of more of a, you know, kind of a cult thing. But I came into this movie excited about it because of its association with Cloverfield, and, you know, having seen it now and realizing that it really doesn't have anything to do with Cloverfield plot-wise, at least not in an important way, and we should quickly give a spoiler warning. We're just going to go full-on into everything that happens in this movie. My point being, really, even though I think they may have pulled a little bit of a bait and switch with how they sold this movie, you know, they were really cagey about exactly why it had Cloverfield in its title. And I'm sure there were some people that went into it thinking it was a sequel. And now I think what we've seen is it's basically what Abrams is going for here is, you know, he wants that name, Cloverfield, to be more of kind of like an anthology type of brand. And this movie feels very similar to Cloverfield. It feels like it comes from, you know, a similar place. But I actually like this movie a lot more than I liked Cloverfield. And I just think it's such a strong screenplay. You know, I think the thing that sticks out to me after a couple of days of thinking about this movie and sitting on it is just how strong the writing is. You know, it's a very simple concept, and you know, three characters basically, and I just feel like every character moment is really well thought out. Everybody's motivations make sense to some extent, even though there's a character in the movie that's full on crazy, and I think ultimately, what I like the most about this is this is a movie that, you know, gets all of its suspense from kind of these plot wheels having to turn at just the right time. You know, they need you to be sold on certain ways of thinking at different parts of the movie for it to work. And I think they execute it so well. And we can get into some of those. But that, to me, that's my initial impression is, I think this is such a smart movie that works for me as an audience member because it took me, I feel like, exactly where where it wanted me to be. And every one of the twists that it threw at me worked so well because of that.
So I like the movie, too. I know that there are going to be a lot of people, perhaps justifiably, they're going to sort of pick it apart and maybe accuse the screenplay of being sort of reverse engineered, where, you know, and first of all, I love the fact that the marketing kept us all in suspense in terms of what was really happening outside the bunker by revealing little to nothing, you know, in the marketing materials. And so that was very effective, and it got me in the theater. And let's just skip ahead to what ends up happening in that she finally escapes and realizes that there is indeed an alien invasion happening. She goes out in the cornfield. There is a UFO flying around, and it sees her. It tries to abduct her. She realizes that in her car there's a bottle of scotch. In the car, she decides to make a Molotov cocktail. She waits and times the opening and closing of the alien that's like running the ship. It's got this weird little like orifice that's opening and closing, like these little flaps. She times that properly, throws the Molotov cocktail in at just the right moment, and it explodes and it brings down the ship. And then she leaves to go to safety and ends up, based on an AM radio report, going to Houston to join the human resistance. So when I say reverse engineering, I mean that everything in this movie, everything that happens, it's like, okay, you could have just said, okay, we want to get to this point. Well, how do we get there? And it sets up all these little clues, breadcrumb-like clues along the way, where even if you think, oh, that's ridiculous, that would never happen, it's like, well, they already laid the groundwork. To me, I think that in the end, overall, I just appreciate this movie's imagination in terms of you know, putting these people in this situation and then paying it off in an absurd way, but one that I feel like was earned and does work and is paid off. But for them to basically have two different movies, one being this terrifying chamber play that's almost reminds me of the movie Room in a lot of ways, and a lot of that's due to John Goodman's performance, which I want to ask you about in a minute. But you know, it's two different movies. It's a three person chamber play where you're all stuck in this small environment, and you know, there's so much attention to every action and everything said that you know ends up contributing to what eventually happens. So I'm a fan of it, and while yes, it is sort of ridiculous, it is over the top and absurd. I appreciate that kind of level of imagination and creativity, especially at this level, because the movie in a lot of ways feels like an indie. It feels like something you'd see at a festival, a small festival, like a Sidewalk or something like that. But in the end, they have just enough Hollywood resources with the entire fight between the girl and the aliens to put it in that, you know, that realm of sci-fi that will get the nerds to come out en masse as it did this weekend. So I'm a fan of the sort of the dichotomy of the movie, but again, the hour or you know 70 minutes or so that leads up to that big climax is so difficult to watch that I don't know if I'm going to be like running back to see it again. But what I will do is I want to go back and see all these little clues, and I'm sure there are lots of little Easter eggs. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, you mentioned we were talking about this yesterday that the movie has like little inserts and cutaways that sort of bind it to the Cloverfield universe.
Right. So I know this, I noticed a couple of them, but I've seen a lot more having Googled about this movie after I watched it. But you know, there's kind of some very subtle stuff in the first Cloverfield movie that sort of suggests there is this evil corporation that had something to do with the monster appearing. And one of there's a couple of instances where we see connections to that in this movie. There's one, the one that I remember jumping out at me in this movie is where when she climbs up into the air filtration system, and there's kind of a little room up there at the top of that. There's a letter sitting on the floor, and it's actually a cutaway shot. There's a very quick close-up shot of the letter. Which I imagine was added after they had already made the movie, but it's basically a letter from the company that is mentioned a few times in Cloverfield. And I think, you know, there's kind of, I think what's neat about what they've done there is it's not really, it wouldn't even make sense for these two movies to be connected plot wise, but I think I like the idea that what, you know, Abrams is trying to do maybe with little things like that is, you know, you introduce these little plot elements that could appear in these stories that are unconnected, almost like, you know, a little trademark type thing. Mm-hmm. You know, the drinks Slusho, which is referenced in, I know is referenced in Cloverfield, but I think it's been in a couple of other J.J. Abrams things. So just kind of like little cool references like that to each other. I think that's neat that they worked those in. But Graham, I want to go back to something you said quickly, because I do think the last act of this movie is going to be, if, you know, I think we both obviously like it, but I think that to me is what I would have expected someone who didn't like the movie to pick on. And I actually thought it was curious that you found that the most fun part of it, and you had a tougher time watching the rest of it. Well, I really enjoyed the portion of the movie in the bunker, I guess just from the tension that it built up. And I felt like the action that was going on, while there was a lot at stake and it was very dangerous, I think it wasn't quite as dark to me, I guess, as something like, you know, Room or some kind of torture porn movie or something like that. It just felt like very clearly it was a, you know, it was a suspense situation. But I do think that last act, especially, you know, I could see someone not buying in. And I've wondered since seeing the movie, Grant, if the title of the movie did not, if it was whatever they were originally going to call it, right, that they had this floating title for it for a little while that was just some nonsense word.
Yeah, what was it? What was the original movie called?
I'd have to look it up, actually. But I know it wasn't, it didn't have the word Cloverfield in the title. And I wonder, Graham, if we had gone to see this movie and it didn't have the word Cloverfield in the title, would you and I feel differently about the last act? Would it have come so far out of left field that we just wouldn't have been able to stomach it?
That's a great question. I mean, I think that the movie, had they not called it Cloverfield and sort of suggested that there was going to be some sort of supernatural or extraterrestrial component to the movie, which, you know, had there not been and it, you know, they'd just kind of gone straight with it, I feel like there would have been a lot of disappointed people.
Yeah,
but, you know,
sure, yeah.
You know, but, and again, like, that's what got me in the theater. I wanted to find out what was going on, like, what was actually happening. Was this all a ruse, a la the village that John Goodman's character created? Or, you know, what's going to happen? Is it going to be the same monster? Is it going to be the same family of monsters? Is it going to be something totally different? And I thought that paid off. I think that, yeah, had it not been called Cloverfield, or had not had the word Cloverfield in it, I think it would have stood on its own and been well received, because, you know, I don't think people would have seen it coming. But I think that you needed, the reason that it's getting so many people in the theater is because of that Cloverfield connection and that J.J. Abrams connection. Maybe if it was just J.J. Abrams whose name was on it, you know, I think you still would have gotten people in there and people would have been pleased with it. You know, why didn't J.J. Abrams put Super 8 in the Cloverfield universe and called it Super Cloverfield 8? But you know, so yeah, I think that would have been interesting, but I think it was a smart choice for them to do it. And I like what you're saying about how he could be building up this anthology type thing. And yesterday when we were talking about, you mentioned the Twilight Zone, that, you know, it's all these stories that exist in this universe that aren't directly linked, but still have sort of the same vibe, these little small aspects that sort of connect them. So I think it worked as it is, and I, you know, had they done it differently, that would have been interesting. But I'm certainly happy with the way it is now.
So there's a moment that, and when you and I talked about this before, you brought up the village, and I think that's really interesting that movie was one that came to mind for you when you were watching this or thinking about it, because I think for this movie to really land its punches, you know, I think they need you at some point to make yourself believe that John Goodman is lying. That's such an important task of this movie for it to work, right? Because they need the Mary Elizabeth Winstead character. They need her to believe it, right? Or else why isn't she just fighting with every fiber of her being to get out of the bunker? And so to me, you know, they have that kind of setup scene where there's the dead pigs outside, but I guess part of why you're bringing up the village is it's almost like the movie really acknowledges the intelligence of the audience and says, you guys know that we could be faking you out. And so they needed to give us something where it was unequivocal that there was great danger outside. And the scene that we get where the woman shows up at the door of the bunker with radiation burns all over her and kind of raving, it's such a great scene in the movie because I think you're still trying to convince yourself, even a little bit afterwards, that he must be putting this on. He must be making this up. You know, this must be fake. But there's no good explanation you can come up with for that woman. And I think it's a really scary, to me it's the scariest scene in the whole movie. It's very disturbing, you know, to have that character be like right on the other side of the glass and you're kind of sitting there wondering like, what's she going to do?
Yeah.
And it's such an important scene. The more I think about it, to the entire premise of the movie, you've got to have that moment where she understands that she legitimately cannot go outside without
right.
taking serious precautions.
Right. And, you know, I thought that there was a chance that she was working with John Goodman's character still, you know, that it's still, you know, would that she wasn't actually in trouble, that she was actually just kind of maintaining the kayfabe that he had created, so to speak. So to speak. But again, it didn't happen. When she does get out, obviously the air is safer to breathe because she sees birds flying around, and you know, that she rips her suit and nothing happens. But I wanted to ask you, on Business Insider, there was an article yesterday talking about how the movie's been successful and all the reasons why it's been successful and who's talking about it and everything. And they said that there's already some early talk about John Goodman as an Oscar contender for Best Supporting Actor. And look, I'm totally for that because you hate this guy. You fear him. You despise him. And that's totally because of his affect, his physicality, his mannerisms, his delivery. You know, I would totally be for that. And what do you think? Should he be on the short list, the very early short list for Best Supporting Actor?
It's a great character, and it's a lot more complicated than I think I first appreciated, because I think everybody wants to just look at this as, you know, some kind of maniac character. And even though he obviously is very imposing and not a good guy, and he's almost demonic by the end of the movie, like, they actually, in a very clever way, they tell an entire story about this guy that kind of explains why he is the way he is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's all these little tidbits that you end up picking up about his daughter and, you know, how he kind of, you know, had trouble relating to her and was trying to do all this stuff mostly to sort of impress his daughter. He even kidnapped another girl as kind of this like effort to understand how to have a relationship with his daughter because he screwed it up. And, you know, I mean, there are definitely like windows into a more complicated person, but he's very clearly crazy. And yet we find out by the end of the movie that at least some of what he has said is true. And so there's no telling by the end of it exactly what was or was not true that he was saying. But I mean, I think he's got this sort of element to him that he tries to put on over the course of the movie where he's trying to be this kind of gentle caretaker. But there's always this kind of fear that he might snap at something sort of random. And and John Goodman, I don't know how old he is now. I mean, he's got to be, my guess is he's close. He's like stunningly close to 70 would be
right.
My guess. And he's very physically imposing in this movie. I mean, you totally buy that they cannot just bull rush him and beat him up. You know, he is a very scary dude in this movie.
Yeah, and thankfully in real life he's actually lost some weight because he's like he's sort of his size is concerning in the movie, but it definitely helps to show that you know he's a guy that these two I guess well they're not she was abducted but the other guy was there voluntarily but that they were going to have trouble you know overtaking him physically so it works for the movie but thank God he is in better shape now. Hopefully he can keep that up.
But yeah, they also I would say also he's so perfectly cast in this movie because of his size. I mean, you there's not a lot of guys that you think of in Hollywood where you go, you know, we need a fat guy that can be scary. And
right.
John Goodman, you know, it's very important that he be taken very seriously in this movie. Despite being really big, because the whole, I mean, there's a lot of plot elements built around the fact that she's able to get places that he can't get. And, you know, I thought that was really well utilized. And I wonder, I mean, I don't know how this script came into existence, but it's really kind of a perfect part for John Goodman.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting, at one point, the Whiplash director, Damien Chazelle, was attached to direct the movie and dropped out. Yeah, but he did get a screenplay credit, a co-writing credit. And this Dan Trachtenberg guy, first-time director, first-time feature director, hopefully we'll see, you know, we'll hear soon what his next project is. And I hope that, I mean, Cloverfield was, 2008?
I think that's right, yeah.
Yeah, I hope that they get, you know, crank out another one of these within the next 2 or 3 years, because it's time to strike, I think. If not, you know, move it to, like, an episodic television format. Like, it would be perfect for something like Netflix.
Yeah,
because you said Twilight Zone, and it's like, look, they've established this brand. They've established this universe. They should make it happen now while the iron is hot. So hopefully we'll hear some announcements because now, you know, Bad Robot's got some extra change in their pockets, some extra portion.
Sure.
Because of the success of a lot of their properties recently. So hopefully they'll invest in this right now.
It's pretty fascinating that he was able to make this sort of weird, you know, cultish indie horror movie into almost, I mean, depending on how the rest of this movie's run goes, into sort of a viable brand that we're now having this conversation about. That, like, you know, it's such a random thing that you never would have guessed. Obviously, it helps Matt Reeves' career a whole lot. You know, I don't think I could have foreseen that it would actually turn into something that we'd be talking about, a multi-movie, you know, sort of franchise potential for this kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll see. And, you know, again, I think that this would be a great double feature with a movie like Room. If you're into it, this genre. So check that out. I would highly recommend that.
It's substantially lighter. This is at least a movie that I would say there's definitely physical violence threatened, but it's a little bit less, psychologically disturbing maybe than Room.
Yeah, so like if you have like a 13-year-old kid that really wants to see Room, just maybe suggest this instead.
Right, it's Room with aliens. That's what we have the pitch. That's how they sold it in the pitch meeting.
Well, Matt, thanks again for chatting with me about this, and we'll talk soon.
All right, thanks, Graham.
For more from the Film Nerds, go to filmnerds.com.